So today we're going to talk through, spend, I think, the bulk of the class on not finishing PID control, but finishing this part of our discussion of PID control. We're going to talk about implementing a PID controller. So we have kind of all the theory. How are we going to do this on a real, quote unquote, real system? All right. So we are going to assume that we have our kind of standard feedback control loop, where we have some reference command, some output, some physical system we're trying to control, GP, and then we're going to say GC is some PID controller. All right. Well, how do we actually, you know, your boss or whatever comes up to you, drops GP on the table in front of you, and says, hey, we need to do some PID control on this thing. How do we actually write the code, write the algorithm, and then write the code to do what we need to do with this block? Okay? That's what we're going to talk to today. So at a high level, what are some requirements for us to be able to do feedback control? Yeah, so I need to be able to feed stuff back, which means I need to be able to measure the output or the states in my system. So some measurements of my output in this form. If we're trying to do anything fancier, we might also need to measure the internal states of the system. So we might not need just position, we might also need to be measuring velocity of the system or something to that effect. And we've said measurement, but maybe really good estimates of the output or the states are enough. And we should get to that in one of the last weeks of class of a really famous and way famous because it works really well. Way, if you have some idea what the model is, to be able to estimate what the states are, given some kind of measurements of some subset of states, maybe. Okay? So I need, you know, for our purposes today, basically, I need some measurements or a really good estimate of what the output is. All right. Am I ever going to be able to measure this exactly? No. Right. So even that comes into play here in that my measurements are actually an estimate of what's happening with the system. Right. My sensor is not infinitely precise or infinitely accurate. So even if I have a really, really nice sensor, I'm really just getting an estimate of what's happening. Right. Is it good enough for it to work? Maybe. Right. What else do I need? What are some other requirements if I'm going to implement some feedback controller, PID in this case?
You need a good approximation of your plant function.
So I might need to know GP. Why do I need to know GP? Okay, why do I need to know the transfer function? Okay, so I can vary parameters, so I can choose parameters.
Well, it gives you a better idea of your output.
Okay, so this is what this is going to do for me. I have some model, and the better model I have, the better I'm going to be able to choose the parameters in that feedback controller, generally. Right? Kind of makes sense. The more I know about my system, the more I can know what GC needs to be to make the system do what I want. That makes sense. What else do I need? I need to choose, yeah, some choice of R. Or if you want to write it in the time domain. So what's my reference command? We'll talk about that. We're going to talk about that in quite a bit of detail starting Tuesday. What else do I need? I think probably you're not picking up because it would be implied that if we're doing feedback control, I need some way to actually do the computation needed here for the most part. There are ways actually to do mechanical PID control, strictly mechanical, but we don't do that so often anymore. Right. So I need some kind of computing. And what that computing needs to be depends on, you know, what's the bandwidth of my system, how fast does it need to run, right? How fancy is what I'm doing in here need to be to make the system do what I want? But what we're going to talk about today, I'm going to assume that we have pretty good measurements or good estimates. We're going to assume that, yeah, maybe new GP, but we've picked out some good gains. So we have a good set of parameters. Right? And we're going to start with kind of arbitrary response. Or a reference command, RT. What we're really going to talk about is how do I shove this into that? How do we actually implement this thing? Right. So let's talk through at a high level. What these steps might look like. Okay. So set this table out, and I'm trying to write some code or do some kind of block diagram in Simulink or LabVIEW or whatever. Drag blocks into the right places to make GC or to make this control loop happen. What do I need to do? Well, we've, I think, stepped on step one already. Yeah, what's the algorithm to actually make this thing work?
Okay, well, you're going to have your input, right?
Okay, got that.
You'll feed that into, like, a loop block that's going to operate on it based off of whatever your controller is.
Sure. I'm asking, what do I need to be in that loop block, as you call it?
You need the error first.
Okay, so how do I get the error?
You compare it to your actual output.
So what you're saying... So I know R of T. Right, next thing, I need to measure the output, if that's what I'm trying to control. Okay. Once I measure the output, in this case, we're going to say, hey, that's Y of T. What's next? Thank you, guys. What else am I going to need to calculate?
Your GC based on that error. If you have,
be more explicit. What does GC need if I'm going to have a PID controller? We need not just error. What do we need?
Gains.
Well, I'm telling you we have a good choice of parameters already. PID controller, what's it look like? Okay, I'm going to say we have part of it already. What's the integral term look like in the time domain?
It's KI, the integral of error.
Derivative term, what does it look like?
The
or at that E dot. Okay? So what else do I need to calculate if I'm going to eventually get to this?
I guess your integral and your derivative.
Sure. So I need... So I calculate my error in each one of the individual terms. I'm saying we already have a good choice. We're kind of assuming we have a good choice for KP, KI, KD so far. I do that. I calculate this thing. I actually feed that out to GP. Then what happens? Yeah, so then I go to 2 and repeat the thing. Okay, so there's our high-level algorithm. We need to choose what our reference command is. Then once we start actually trying to control the thing, we need to measure the output, what we're trying to control. Use that output along with the original reference command to calculate the error. Calculate the rate of change of that error. Calculate the integral of that error. From those terms, we have what the output of the PID controller should be, U of T. We actually output that to the system. Go back up, measure what was the output of the total system now, which is Y. And you just loop on that forever and ever and ever. Okay, so... let's kind of fill in some details.
Yeah, there might be some problems in the details.
That's a very good guess, because why are we talking about it otherwise?
Well, what I'm saying is, if it's just looping around this rapidly,
yeah,
and it's like, oh, the output is such and such, so I'm going to really ramp it up.
Sure. So
and it's like, oh,
that's going to depend a little bit about what your... that's going to depend a little bit on what your picture gains to be. Right. I think there are even some implementation issues, which is what I wanted to talk about. Okay. So let's talk first about point B. We want the rate of change of that error. Okay. How the heck am I going to do that? Difference in error at different time steps. Sounds like you're on the right track. Okay. So basically, any control system you have is actually going to be digital. Right? We're almost never dealing with analog control systems anymore. Right? So I have some error signal. You had 201, you should know that. Analog means it's continuously varying. Digital means we're sampling. Right? So what we're going to do is we say that we're going to assume right now, for now, is that I'm running this at kind of regular times. I know how often this thing is happening, and that's the same time. Steps 2 to 6 take the same amount of time every time. Okay. So what that means basically... is it each of these times delta t is the same. Okay. Call that your sample time for the system. And really all we know about this blue signal, this blue analog signal, is its value every time we sample it. So every time we get back up to 2 and measure it, that's all we know that instant only. We don't have any idea what's going on between those samples. Right. If we get these samples close enough, I get a pretty good approximation of that analog signal. But I still don't know what's happening between samples. And there are some nice sampling laws that tell you how fast you need to sample to be able to recreate the total analog signal. But don't worry about that for now. Okay. We would normally, to give you an idea, you normally sample at least 10 times the highest frequency you're trying to control. Right? So if your highest frequency is 1 hertz, you need to be sampling 10 times a second. 100's more comfortable. Right? So if you have a 1 hertz signal you're trying to control, system with a 1 hertz natural frequency, you need to have 100 samples per second. The limit, the law, from this guy Nyquist, who's done a lot of stuff, strictly speaking, you only need twice the frequency to exactly reconstruct the signal. That's the theoretical limit for that. But we'll sample at 10 to 100 times the highest frequency, typically. Okay, so back to calculating our error. So what you say is I'm going to compare my error right now, an error to some other sample. Right. So let's pick a time step. Let's see, I'm going to say, E of k, where k is the current time step. Right. Time step before that, that's t of k minus 1. That guy's e of k minus 1. And then if I want to get the rate of change of the error, what do I do? So you say compare it. How do we want to compare it?
E of k minus e of k of 1 over t of k.
Okay. So what is that actually doing between those two points? It's just drawing a line, right? So we're getting the slope approximation of the slope of that curve, right? It's the derivative. So in this case, that's our approximation of the rate of change at that point. Okay. What's that formula called? You guys know that?
Forward difference.
Finite difference. Yeah, finite difference is the bigger class. Yeah. Okay. And you can be fancier. You can look across multiple samples and get a more accurate prediction, if you will, of the derivative as well. Quite often this will be good enough. Okay. So what does this mean for our algorithm now? And that's how I'm going to calculate the rate of change of error. What does that mean over here? What do we need to add?
You need to know your time, delta t.
I need to know delta t. All right. Okay. So we're going to plug in. Calculate delta t if it's not constant for my system. Depending on what your system is, you may have to actually figure out how long it's been since you updated. Okay. What does it mean? Okay, so I need to calculate delta. I need to know what delta t is, whether my system's running at a constant speed, which we kind of assumed at this point, or it's not at a constant loop time and I have to calculate how much time there's been. Okay. So I need to figure out delta t. All right, and then we've said, hey, this E at the current step and replace that with that estimate. Okay, what else? There's one more change we need to make. In general, to accommodate calculating the derivative change this way.
Okay, well, if you have a set delta t and you find the derivative error that way, you also have to look at the interval error and set that time difference to like the same thing. So you're calculating within the same.
Hang on to the integral stuff right now. There's one more change even associated with calculating our derivative this way. Well, this in this E of t is embedded that. Right, so the output's updating the whole time. Right, we're kind of embedding, that's embedded in the, right.
So it meant like U of T.
Well, U of T, yeah, we changed over to using our kind of approximation of that rate of change from the finite difference.
We're going to need to keep track of which error came before or after.
That's what we need, right. So what we need also. Because we need the error from the previous time step to calculate our rate of change. We weren't saving that before. So we have to set aside some memory in our controller to save EK before we loop back up here and measure a new one. And after you calculated everything, basically you set EK minus 1, time from the previous time step is equal to the current one. And actually, that probably is going to go there. Doesn't really matter. But the bigger point, we need to save our current error because we need that in the next time step. So if we moved on here and we're trying to calculate the rate of change there, we need to know that one from the current step. Right? Okay. All right. Yeah, you can hold on to more information if you needed EK double dot, but so far we don't need that. No. Okay. If I'm going to have to calculate this, if it's not given to me, how do I do that? One more change we kind of have to make if I don't have a fixed time sample. Delta t. How long has it been since the last time I calculated all this stuff?
Delta t amount of time?
If it's delta t amount of time, I'm asking how do you figure out how long it's been?
Take the time and the time when you calculate that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next time you calculate.
Sure. So. I can measure the time. Most controllers will give you their current time, right? So I can use that current time, and I get down to the end of the loop, save that time, and compare it to the new one when I get back to the top of the loop. So I know how long it has been. So current time minus my last time gives me delta t. Okay, so moving on. We got some ideas about what we can do for this integral. How do I calculate this integral?
Same time step. You got to keep the same, make sure it matches up with the. So if it's time from the derivative,
okay. Beginning of delta t to the current time. Okay. I think you're all on the right track, sounds like. just the area under the curve. Yeah, I think that's the easiest way to think about it. So we can do trapezoidal and all we want, but let's just can. We're not going to for right now. You can calculate that area on the curve however you want. Right? So at time EK, or at time TK, what then is that integral?
0 to TK.
So look, something like that, right? So kind of using our notation from over here, T. So just the area under the curve. What's the area under the curve? How are you estimating that? Right, so you know, basically we're just picking out rectangles.
Right?
Yeah, it's just a summation. Just that, right?
But delta T wouldn't be like your TK minus TK minus 1, right? It'd be TK minus 0.
No. It's this, because it gets summed. You're adding up. What's the area of this rectangle? Right. Area of this rectangle, EK minus 1 times delta T. EK times delta T. And here, yeah, we are kind of assuming delta T is constant, but if it's varying, you can account for that too. So we're just adding up that area every time. Okay. So we have a way in our kind of looping controller here to calculate that integral term. See any problems with that so far? It's, in this case, well, over here it starts to overestimate, right? It is an estimation, you're right. We can't really do a ton better because we have this digital control system. We're only able to sample when we can sample. So we could do a fancier numerical integration, right? So, yeah, we could take the slope and do the trapezoidal type integration if we wanted. Right? Okay. If we're sampling fast enough, however, right, if this delta T, that rate is 10 to 100 times faster than the signal itself, you're going to get a pretty good estimate. Right? That error is going to be kind of small.
So the fact that you're summing from t equals 0 to where you are now, that term will constantly grow bigger, right?
The integral term will, in this case, because the error is always positive. Like our error is always positive. You can have negative error, and then hopefully it goes to 0. If you've designed everything the right way, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you not, is that, I mean, you don't necessarily.
Well, this is the error. We're calculating the error at time step k, right? At time tk. So we're over here at tk. All right. No, I mean, I think, what do I need to know in order to calculate it at time tk? How many past samples of my error do I need? All of them. Yeah, so if we just naively, blindly implemented this, I have to remember the error at every time step forever in the past to be able to calculate this integral. That's not good to do, right? It's going to take an infinite amount of memory, eventually. How can I get around that? That's exactly right. And that's exactly what we do. So what we have is kind of something that's like that. Or you could write it in summation. In that term, we just it's just a constant, right? We don't need to remember all the EIs in the past. We just keep track of that sum and say that sum for the last next time through.
And you just update it.
And I update that so next time I'm through, after I calculate U of T, leave my okay. So I save my running sum from the integral term. So that one's from the last loop. And then I save the new value for my next loop too. Okay, so what's in that green becomes the blue for the next time through. If we have a disturbance, the disturbance is going to cause some error. And then if we've picked out P, I, and D correctly, yeah, this should all take care of that. Yeah. Okay. So we have our kind of updated loop here. All right, so now we're choosing our reference command RFT. Every time through the loop, we're going to measure the current Y of T. Let's call that guy Y of K. Right, our current time step is K. At our sample time, we can calculate our current error by just looking at the current time step of each one of those things. They're not really functions of time anymore. We're just sampling. Okay. Well, it's still going to be a sample. It's not going to change, you know. It could be, it's a function of time, so it could be a varying signal. Right? We're not saying R of K is constant. Right? So it could be time varying as well. I'm going to say and the last int for last integral term. So last time you got it, plus this time. Where that matches what we have over there. So measure my output. Current output's Y of K. I either calculate the sample time by getting the current time and subtracting off the last time we went through, right? Or having this predefined by my nice controller, microcontroller that runs at a constant speed. Calculate the error, that part's easy. The rate of change, we use our finite difference to get the kind of approximation of the rate of change based on our samples. We do this approximation for the integral error, kind of digital discrete integration, probably how you learn to integrate when you put calculus. All right. Once we have all that, all right, we can save everything we need for the next step. Basically, right? So we need to save EK for the next time step to calculate the derivative. We need to save the current time to help us calculate the delta t for the next in the next time step. We need to save the current integral to add there. Okay. We have now, let's say this is integral u of k. Okay. And now we kind of have the current time step of output U of K is proportional to the current error plus KI times this term plus KD times our current estimate of the rate of change. We output that stuff, we go back up to 2 and repeat. All right. So let's write out this in a little bit, this UK in a little bit more detail. There might be some improvements we can make there too. So our PID controller output So it's kind of reduced down to that. And I'm still using the integral to just kind of remind us that that's some kind of integration term there for E of K. So that guy doesn't change. Are there any simplifications I can make here? Or maybe what about this would allow me to make a simplification? If delta t is constant, what can I do? Yeah, I can pop it out of both those summations. And the derivative term. Would I want to do that?
If you know that the time step is constant.
If I know it's constant, yeah.
Then you should.
Then I should?
What? If it's constant, yeah, sure. If it's not, then...
Well, does it provide any advantage? That's the bigger question. If I have kind of our linear PID controller in that I'm not changing the gains over time, right? So the gains are constant as well. Then what is this? It's constant, right? What is this? It's a constant, right? So the advantage of this form is it basically you're saving yourself a few multiplications every cycle. Right? Because I only need to calculate this term once. It's a constant forever after that. For a pretty large number of systems, saving a few multiplications is not going to make such a big deal. But it can. Right? If you're trying to really bump up your sampling, right? If you're trying to save energy, if you're going to Mars, right? you're probably going to write your PID controller this way. Right? Every computation matters. Every piece of energy you're spending matters.
Because if we already know our constants and our variables, we can, it's easy, so you know, if we are going to control possibly.
Yeah, I think if we needed to do something beyond this, we would probably break away from a PID type controller.
Okay.
With the exception maybe of making, well, in that case, you could maybe KP, KI, KD start changing with time. Kind of gain scheduled PID controller, we would call that. But then we have to go back to this form basically for that case. Okay. So if I'm going to write the controller in this form, what do we need to keep track of every loop? So those k's are going to need to, they're all being a constant. We're assuming in order to be able to factor that out, we're basically assuming that delta t is constant. So we don't really need to worry about the time stuff each time, probably. Right.
What do you mean? I mean, you have to keep track of where you're at. Like,
what do you mean where?
Iterations, your error, where did it go wrong?
What do you mean where you're at?
Like when you're calculating the sums, like you have to know where you're summing from.
Well, this sum is a constant in this at this time step, right? This was just calculated the last time step. Right, that sum is these first three things. I calculate that once and I save it. Next time through, I just add the next rectangle and save that.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, you have to know where you're at, like what you're calculating. You know, so you don't calculate the same thing twice.
I think this takes care of that.
Okay.
I need to keep track of V of K.
Yeah, so it changes a little bit. In that I don't need to keep track of this last integral term, really. I just need to keep track of the last E of K. Right? So I add the current error to the last summation. So that T comes out. So it's not really the integral term anymore, is the only point. So it changes a little bit what you have to save, but you are going to have to save stuff for the previous loop. Like, so this is a constant. That's from the previous loop. So we have a few things we need to save from the prior time step through the loop. Okay. Do we see any problems with this? Can we improve further? E of K out to where?
Separate the equations so that way you can then take all of your E of K's and put them in one.
Yeah, you might could do that. Let's see, summation. There's some tricks you probably can play. This is gonna be a pretty good form for calculation though, because I could just solve this term, just solve that term. Just solve the proportionals. I can solve each one of those independently and then sum them together. Right? So you wouldn't, quite often you're going to, you know, what you would do kind of in practice is probably calculate this term, multiply it by the proportional, save it, calculate that term, multiply it here. So if we,
so I got E of K times KP plus KI plus KD, and I can have a sum of the constants.
I think you can play with the order you calculate things in, basically. I mean, I think that's what it's doing for you. Is it a more convenient order to calculate and solve things? Okay, I think there are some more improvements we need to make. And let's look at one problem with this controller. Leave that up. I'm going to get rid of this for right now. And let's see. I think we'll be done with that too. All right, so I'm going to drop back into functions of time for just a second. So we've been looking at these kind of sample-based ones because this is how we'd actually do it. Right. So I'm going to write that's our error, right? I can change R however I want, right? I have control over R. R can be anything. Right. R is not even limited to being something that's physically possible for the system to do. Right. Step commands, a good example of that. We looked at step commands as example reference inputs. Physical system can't track a step command perfectly. Well, if I'm looking at the derivative term, let's just call it D for now, the derivative term, it's that, right? Which means it's also that. What happens to that term if I have a step change in my reference command? Yeah, R is going to be changing. Almost always R is changing in some way, right? So if I have that's my reference command. What's its derivative right here? Infinity. Right, I have a step change in my reference command. Its derivative is infinity. It has infinite slope right here. Right? So, what does that mean for my derivative term on the controller? It's going to go off infinity too.
So it's going to like overreact?
Well, it's going to do more than that. So, so if we have a discontinuous input, reference command T, which we can have, and quite often do have, right? Go to there, right now, right? It's a step command. Stop, right now, that's a discontinuous input. We have an infinite rate of change of that reference command, which leads to the derivative term of your PID controller going off to infinity too at that time step. So that's a problem, right? We're essentially saying at this time step, at that time step t of k, where my reference command changed instantaneously, my PID controller wants infinite force or infinite. It wants u to go to infinity, right? Because it's trying to track something that's impossible to track. I'm going to need an infinite amount of force or whatever to do that. So, that's a problem. How do we fix it? Don't use a step input. That's a reasonable solution.
You could also just ignore your derivative term until after your first delta t.
Okay.
You would actually have some.
So I switch off the derivative term whenever there's a discontinuous change in reference command. Well, it's only, discontinuous change only happens at one sample, right?
Right. That's not the same, so we just ignore that sample, basically.
Okay. So if we look at our reference command, like we did the error. I can just use this one. Sorry. And maybe it actually does this, too. Actually, we'll answer both those questions. So I take my reference command now. Okay. And it's digitized because it has to be. That's how we're out processing it, right? So 0 there. My reference command is represented by those red dots. Can I just ignore the derivative term whenever I have a step change between one red dot and the next? No, because every one of those is a step change. Right? This is not an analog, smoothly changing function. So I don't really want to ignore the derivative term completely. Could limit it, yeah. So certainly, we'll talk about that one in a second. That right now, as we stand, I don't have any limits on what u of t is.
Yeah.
So that might be a first solution.
You could limit it to, if you know your system well enough.
Sure.
You could know its capabilities.
Okay.
Like if your system, say you're putting out velocity, can't go faster than 5 meters per second, you limit that output.
Okay.
Say if you're.
Yeah, we're gonna talk a lot more about that in a second. So this phenomenon, so you can put a name to it. It's called derivative kick. Okay, so let's think about, well, I really would like to, so the problem with just addressing this problem by limiting the output is you still end up with a derivative controller that dominates the force for that instant, for that sample, which can only cause problems as well. Right. So even if I'm limiting my total output to something that's reasonable, the D is going to be the dominant term. Okay. And it's just going to slam it to maximum anytime there's a change. So really, every time step now, I'm more or less slamming to my max or min force or output.
Okay, so is derivative kick pretty much directly a function of how different those points are from each other?
Like, well, the rate of change from any of these guys, right, that's a step change as far as your sampling is concerned.
Okay.
Right. So the actual function is always discontinuous. If you have a discontinuous R, R dot goes to infinity, that is what causes the derivative term to go off to infinity.
Okay.
And that's the derivative kick, goes off to infinity. In practice, yes, you are going to be dividing by some delta t, right, to get that approximation of the derivative. But you still end up with not infinity, but some really, really large term.
Yeah, so even if those are closer together,
yeah,
not so different in amplitude,
yeah,
the same thing.
Yeah, same thing happens.
Okay,
so let's think about what this derivative term is doing for us, right? What's its function in the PID controller?
The derivative term?
Derivative term.
To predict a change and act accordingly?
So yeah, it reacts to change, rate of change of error. I wouldn't necessarily say it's predicting, although I know why you're saying that. So yeah, it's acting on rate of change of error, of stuff. Okay. So, and we've talked through, this is something like a damper between my reference command and my actual system, right? We've talked about that for the mass spring damper. So this derivative term is like a virtual damper between where my system is and where I want it to be. What I'm going to propose is instead of making it between where my system is and where I want it to be, can we just do this? Just ignore the derivative of that reference command. Using our analogy of the damper, what does that change? Okay, so in we're looking just at the derivative term. Derivative controller is basically that, where R is the reference command. Right? So it's some kind of virtual damper between what I want my system to be doing, that's Y in this case, and the reference command, the rate of change of the reference command. Okay.
You're just holding R constant.
So I'm holding R constant. No, I'm going to say, but let R still be changing. Right? But what is, well, I guess in some ways it's like holding R constant, but I think it's helpful to visualize it slightly differently. So in this case, what am I really trying to do to the rate of change in my output variable?
What do you mean? Like with that equation?
With this, with my proposed solution to this problem.
Okay.
Yeah, so what I'm trying to do is limit the rate of change of y. I have some output that's proportional to that rate of change with a negative sign, trying to limit that. So what it really looks like is some damper to some imaginary ground. Yeah, so it's still there. We're going to use it to calculate the error and use it in the proportional term. We're still going to use it in the integral term. Right. What we're just trying to get around is this problem. Anytime there's a discontinuous change in my reference command, the derivative term goes off to infinity. I'm just going to ignore the r dot part. Right. So instead of acting on the rate of change of the error, I'm actually acting on the rate of change of the output, or the rate of change of the measurement. So you'll hear this called kind of a derivative on measurement type PID controller. All right. So in that case, our algorithm changes again. I'm going to calculate my PID controller that way now. And then I need to save y of k. Okay. Derivative measurement. This one's pretty common change. You'll see most kind of industrial PID controllers are going to be using this form. All right. What other problems do we have? We already kind of hit on one. We don't have any limits on the output. Right, so even if we fixed that problem, we could still be generating, if there's large enough error or something to that effect, an output U of T that my system can't do. Right? Maybe I have, you know, if I'm generating voltage for some DC motor, one sec, then I can't generate that much voltage. Or if it's current, I can't generate that much current or force. My PID controller has calculated something based on the current error, and UT is too large. So that's a problem. Yeah. Question?
KD was
K? It's negative, yeah. Thank you. So I'm going to put the negative with the Y to match the form. Okay. So we need to modify 5 probably, too. We need to have some kind of explicit check to make sure that what we're outputting is within the limits of what we're able to do. So I'm going to get rid of that one for just a second. How do we want to do that? Probably some kind of if thing, right?
Your output is greater than max output, then your output should equal your max.
Okay. I think that's halfway there. That's right. So if it's output can be 0. Output 0, hopefully you're tracking exactly right. Okay. So this is actually check U of T now. Then we have go to 2. All right. Any other problems? What does implementing this check do for the integral term? So. Yeah, so my y of t is going to be changing all the time. Not necessarily. Depends on what g of p actually is. Okay, so let's step through kind of what I'm hinting at. I have this PID controller, and based on the current error, right, I've generated some U of T. And my PID controller is saying, I need this U of T to get rid of that error. Right? We get down to step 5 in our kind of modified algorithm, and the controller says, whoa, I can't do that. Okay? So what happens is I'm not able to get rid of that error anymore. I still have error after that step. Exactly. So now my integral term, because I'm not able to get rid of the error based on my limits, I have error at every time step, guaranteed, if I'm exceeding my actuary limits. So the integral term adds up over time. And it's growing and growing and growing. And it's not actually affecting the output, because the output's still within the limits, or still limited by this script here. So even though your integral term could be going off to infinity, right, you're explicitly limiting the output of the PID controller. So the PID output to the GP is not doing what the integral controller is telling it to do. And the integral keeps saying, hey, come on, we got to get rid of this error. Right? It's accumulating every time step, it adds up. But we don't do anything about it. Okay? So what happens now when somehow, maybe I change my reference command back to something that my system is able to track? Now I have this really, really large integral term that saved up that error from all the time steps before where I wasn't able to actually output enough force to get rid of that change. So how long does that integral term take to come back down?
A while.
It's going to take a while, right? Because it takes, basically it will take this guy going negative for some time for that integral term to get back to zero. So once you start limiting the output of your PID controller, you also need to limit the size of the integral term. Okay. So where can we put this? In this case, we can make it part of C. It'll be a little bit different place in my notes, but C, we calculate and check, well, what's our check on the integral term? Yeah, so we're just going to use the same max and min for the output, the total output. We're okay a little bit with the integral term dominating, trying to get rid of that steady state error. So what would that be? So sloppy on the bottom of the board. But same form we have here, just integral term at time step k compared to u max. This is called, by the way, that phenomenon. Integral windup is the term for when that integral term keeps accumulating over time. So this check is the fix for integral windup in a PID controller. Okay. So that C kind of goes away. And now we're using that form over there. There's a decent PID controller implementation. Right. What other things do we need to worry about, let's say? What other problems are there? What other conditions might we want to consider if we were writing this professionally, which hopefully some, at least some of you will be doing at some point in your careers?
Does that say integral
something? Wind up.
Oh,
is what that phenomenon of the integral term growing off to infinity call. What happens if I want to change my gains? Do I ever want to change my gains in real time, let's say, while the controller is running? I probably would, right? So if I've gone with this form of that controller, right, changing KPKI, does some stuff here, I have to kind of recalculate what I want to change for KI. That's not such a big deal. But what it also might change is that basically this is kind of getting incorporated every time. So you have to compensate for that as well. What about if the sampling time is changing? Yeah, so I might want to change my sampling time. Right? It's a way maybe to save on computation. Right? If I'm going to Mars and I'm just in effectively free flight on the way, maybe. I can slow things down. I don't need to sample and correct as often, maybe. Right? So I can change delta T. And now I go back over and that's going to change these things as well. Right? But what that also changes is kind of this integral term too, because that had delta T kind of mixed up in it. So we need to consider that. Would I ever want to turn my PID controller off and then turn it back on, maybe? Maybe. I might have some case where I just let it coast or something, right? I might have some case where a human operator might walk up to the system and want to do something manually and then click back over to the PID control when they're done. So if you're going to do that, what do you need to take care of? That's right. So you need to basically still be keeping track of error, where things are at, right? So you can't shut off all your computation. You're still going to be doing most of this computation every loop through. You just don't output the output anymore.
Well, doesn't it kind of automatically shut itself off to an extent when you have to control your integral?
Like, no, all it's doing is limiting down to some bounds.
Okay.
So it's still trying to push. It just can't push infinitely hard. Then you start from step one or step two now. Right, this should work every time you boot it up. Should be fine. Okay. What other problems or concerns does this have? Well, we've touched on one from the very beginning. Depends on me having pretty good measurements or estimates of my states. That's not always available. Right? In fact, for a huge number of systems that are interesting, it's really hard to actually measure and estimate your states. Right? So for example, you're trying to place something with a long-reach robotic arm. Right? I could typically measure the joint angles pretty well, but if that arm's a little bit flexible, I don't have any idea what's happening out at the endpoint, which is what I really care about. So I may not have a great measurement of what I'm actually trying to control. Right? For a crane, it's really actually hard to measure the crane payload as it swings. I can measure the trolley and things like that, but the actual swinging crane payload, it's not so easy to measure. Well, you could maybe, again, use some smarts to get good estimates of what they are based on your knowledge of the system and what input you gave it in the past, but it's still just going to be an estimate. So just keep in mind, you're talking any kind of feedback controller, it's largely dependent on you having a really good measurement or really good estimates of your system states, okay, which are not always available. Okay? So this is one potential problem, and that's going to be a problem for any kind of feedback controller you try to design in your whole career.
So does that mean maybe people who are really good at like hand-eye coordination are just PID controllers that really know how to...
That's a really interesting question, and it's still an active area of research of what control mechanism do we use when we're trying to do stuff. Right? Certainly we learn over time. You can think of learning how to do stuff as you're tuning your gains, and some people have tried to fit human performance into like a PID controller type thing. Turns out most of the time it's usually a bit more complex than that. But yeah, you know, people that are good athletes have really good feedback control systems. Maybe not a PID, but they have that kind of system. What's the other kind of major thing that we haven't addressed yet? What if I'm not able to choose my R? I'm going to go a level higher than that, and what's a good choice for R? Right? We have control over what we're asking that system to do. Right? So we've talked. It doesn't have to be just steps or ramps or parabolas or something like that. Right? We get to choose R. We get to choose that reference command. Right? So how much effect do you think what reference command I'm trying to get the system to track has influence that has on the system performance? Yeah, it's really high, actually. Right? So what I'm asking the system to do really matters for its performance, for its output. Right? And I have that, I have control over that. Right? So that's what we're going to start talking about on Tuesday, a way to choose R of T. Right? Questions about that before we talk 2 minutes about a week from today? So yeah, we can, if I think I'm understanding, I can choose R as a function of time. I could modify R as a function of my system output even. Right? And in fact, that's what human operators do. So I could have, if I had some kind of fancy feedback controller on my crane that's operating, and a human walks up to the thing and grabs a joystick and starts driving it, he or she's also looking at the output and making some decisions from what I'm asking that crane to do by pushing on the levers. So yeah, there could be other loops here. R could be changing based on the output. So you have this kind of cascaded feedback controller, a little bit like the velocity controller we talked about last time, right? The that position controller was choosing the velocity reference command for the internal loop. So yeah, R can be based on some kind of feedback. Other questions? Okay, we have 2 minutes. I'm going to post with the notes today, an overview, kind of list of stuff that'll be on the exam a week from today. It'll be a similar format, so 3 to 4 questions with multiple pieces to each one. It will focus on the stuff we covered since the first exam, right? But I think this is one of those classes where you can't compartmentalize and only study that stuff, right? It's one that kind of builds over time, right? So while it's not explicitly cumulative, you got to know the earlier stuff to get this stuff too. It'll be, again, similar format in that I'm not going to ask you for 42 as an answer, right? Should I try to explain your understanding, right? Be able to draw and reason about a root locus and pole locations, that kind of thing. Right. I'll get the overview posted later on today. If you have questions, feel free to email. I'm going to post some problems as well, kind of like we did for the first time, that are not, I won't take them up, but I'll post the solutions to help you study for the exam. All right.
Would these be book problems?
Yeah, they'll be book problems. When you're working those, as you, I guess, probably saw in the first exam, you know, I would take the book problems not as the exact type of problem you're going to get on the exam, but to help you further your understanding and build some intuition about how things work. So I probably saw that in the first exam. I think some of you even commented on that, that there is some difference between book problems. Book problems are a tool, one tool in our toolbox to help you guys develop some intuition and learn this stuff. They're not the only tool. Yeah. Okay, that's it.